Angus, good morning.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Now, a bit of transparency here. I do work at Grapeshot as well, so scandalous. It must be a very familiar face. But now, Angus, now it's Grapeshot's 10th year at the student publication at Macquarie University.
Yep.
How have you managed to last so long, especially with the decline of print media?
That's a funny question, because Grapeshot actually as a magazine is rather young in terms of like other student publications. I mean, Honi Soara has been going since like, that's a University of Sydney magazine. That's been going since like the friggin' 1930s or something. But Grapeshot has had lots of iterations, which is really interesting to look past. One of my favourite things about student publications is that they act as a sort of like a historical like record to look back through, because universities, in terms of the students at least, have a really high turnover. So like you come, you stay for 3 or 4 years and then you leave. So that history can be lost so easily. But it's captured through the student magazines, which I think is so, so important. And as you say, you know, print media could be considered to be in dire straits. I don't necessarily believe it's as bad as people say. But it certainly is hard to convince university executives, you know, keep giving us money so we can print this magazine sometimes. But I think it's really, really important because, as I said, it acts as that historical record, and it really engages students. Like, people want to read and write about what's going on. I mean, it's just such an important part of university tradition to have that student publication to elevate the voice of young people in, you know, a media landscape that often they get ignored in.
Exactly. Like, you talk about elevating their voice. So obviously student publications aren't just a place for students to publish their writings. Do you think they have a certain function to play in campus life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Grapeshot especially, I mean, we do a lot of, you know, kind of, I guess, keeping the university accountable a lot. Recently, there's been a lot of development and stuff around campus, and they kind of conveniently don't communicate very well with the students. They, you know, students come to campus and they just find, like, there's been these courtyard trees in the campus, 120 of them, that have been there for 50 years, and they just all got cut down over the break, and students came and have just seen their courtyard, you know, in ruins, basically. And I think it's very convenient for a university that's, and this is true of universities in general, that are becoming more corporatized and are becoming more profit driven and are acting like more and more like businesses. And that's not necessarily their fault. It's the fault of, you know, higher education funding continually being slashed. So they have to find other ways of making money, and that falls onto the students. So they want to be as marketable as possible. So it's just like constantly, you know, upgrading and stuff like that, and not necessarily letting the students know, because it's very convenient to them, like I said before, that there's a high turnover, because there's no one to keep them accountable and be like, hey, the way you cut down all those trees with, you know, not letting anyone know is really shady, or, you know, kicking out those independent businesses that have been here for a decade that people really care about and kicking them out, that's really sad. You need to be held accountable for this, and you need to be held accountable by the students that are at university now. You need to look after that community.
Right. Now, student publications were once the only way to find out what was happening on campus. And obviously, with the rise of the internet, there's a lot of other ways. We've got a lot of meme pages for Macquarie now. Do you think student publications are still needed in the digital age?
Absolutely, because, I mean, they are really valuable because, like, in the mainstream media, I heard someone refer to that the other day as the lame stream media, which I thought was hilarious.
I'm saving that phrase.
And anyway, like I said before, like, it's just a way for young people to report on the issues that are affecting them in a way that a journalist working for a mainstream publication wouldn't be able to. I wouldn't have time to. I wouldn't have the care to. And there's just the most incredible history of student publications. Like, when the Vietnam War was happening, journalists over in Vietnam were starting to send back footage and photos of the destruction and the deaths and all of that. And they sent it back to Australia, and the mainstream media wouldn't touch it. It was still quite conservative. It was the 60s, yada, yada. And the student media and the underground media were among the first people to start publishing this stuff. And then, because it got so many eyes on it, the mainstream media picked it up. And then that's how the anti-war sentiment in Australia started. Like, so student media has this way of, you know, being bolshy and being brave, going places other people won't, and enacting huge, over long periods of time, obviously, huge amounts of social and cultural change. So I think that's a really good example of how important student publications can be.
That's really interesting. Hmm. If you just tuned into The Daily this morning, we're speaking with Angus Dalton, the editor-in-chief of Grapeshot magazine, about the importance of student media in this day and age. Now, Angus, what is your team doing to stay relevant in this age of digital media?
I think the need to stay relevant by being on digital is, as I said before, a bit exaggerated. I mean, it's about being smart, obviously, and having that good online stream going and, you know, having a podcast and having a presence on social media. But I do think that in general, it is exaggerated and people are coming back to print and having that craving for long form, robust journalism again. There was like the ebook boom, and like the book industry is a really interesting example because, like, say maybe 5-10 years ago when ebooks started coming out, there was a spike. Sorry, what's the opposite of a spike? A down spike in print sales and a spike upwards in ebook sales, and the book industry flipped out. One of the biggest Australian publishers, Pan Macmillan, started an imprint, like a smaller part of their company that was just dedicated to ebooks, and they thought that was going to be the one that took off. But about last year or the year before that, it folded because people are still buying print books. And if you look at the statistics, young people are the ones that are supporting print media. It's the older generations that have, you know, picked up iPads and ebooks and stuff. Younger people and the people taking over the reins are still, you know, still want print media. They want print books. Yeah, and I was in America recently, where obviously the media landscape and the political landscape in general is so interesting. And I read this really good article by this magazine called New York. And they basically made the point that because they've got such a lunatic in the highest office who is very elastic with the facts. It's meant that people no longer trust those systems of power anymore as much. And there's a greater, like, Donald Trump is there yelling about fake news. But by doing that, he's actually made people realize that they need to be responsible for the journalism they consume and for demanding truth out of their media. So yeah, there is a higher scrutiny on media and print media, but that's a good thing because it means we're doing our jobs better. And people are valuing the truth and professional journalism way more. And it might be being printed in a different form, but that's fantastic. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if it's printed on paper or on a web page, as long as the professionals are doing what they do best and people are holding them accountable and making sure that they report honestly. That's like the best thing. I'm seeing this as such a fantastic time to get into journalism and to get into media.
Exactly. Well, for people who want to get into journalism and media, what advice would you give to students who kind of want to get into the media industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. Make your own content. You don't need to rely on, you know, submitting to people. Start a blog, start anything, start publishing it. If it's good, people will read it, right? You don't need to be published by the Sydney Morning Herald or anything like that. And also, to use the book industry as an example again, so many people are writing these books on Tumblr and just free to read, and then they'll be picked up by Penguin, and next minute they have like 30 million like reads. And it's the same with journalism. People just start doing their own thing and then they will get picked up. Like, it's such a good environment for freelancing. Like, if you're a hard worker and you're passionate, because it is hard and it can be extremely taxing, but it's so much fun as like a career to pursue. And don't let the naysayers like talk you out of it, because as I said before, this is like the best time to be getting into journalism because it's new, it's fresh, it's changing, and it's exciting. So there's some buzzwords for you.
I love buzzwords are amazing. Angus, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.